to order. Do I do the public hearing first before we do the Pledge of Allegiance?
Whichever you prefer.
Okay, we'll just go ahead and do the public hearing portion first. I need a motion to amend the agenda so that we can have the public hearing for Ordinance 2022-1.
And notice of the public hearing was advertised. It was just inadvertently worded differently on the agenda.
I make a motion that we amend the agenda to have the public hearing on Ordinance 2022-1.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Can I have a motion to open the public hearing for Ordinance Number 2022-1, an ordinance of the Mayor and Council of Fettlesburg to amend Chapter 143 of the Fettlesburg Town Code titled Planning and Zoning Commission to amend the composition of the commission to remove a member of the council.
I make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Are there any public comments? So what we're doing is we are previously it was stated that a member of the council could attend planning and zoning, but they could not vote. They had no say, which means we could end up with a tie of two no and two yes for something that came before planning and zoning. So what we're doing is we're having it where we can appoint a fifth member of the community, and we will still have a liaison from mayor and council attend the meetings, which they could attend anyway. They just wouldn't be able to say anything or vote, but they could attend and be our liaison so we knew what was going on. And so that's the purpose of the wording change.
Yep. And the local government article requires that you either have 3, 5, or 7 planning commission members. So having the fifth be a council member was kind of counterproductive because they couldn't actually do anything. So this allows it to actually be a voting member.
So if anybody has any comments? Yep.
Is the fifth person the voice of the council or the independent voice of the individual?
It's the independent voice of an individual. So we solicited for volunteers.
Not the council.
Correct. Correct. They are just there to listen and report back as to what was kind of serve as a liaison. Anything else?
So there will be a vacant seat on the planning commission.
If you'd like to be
anyone's interested.
No. All right, so can I have a, seeing as how there are no comments, can I have a motion to close the public hearing for Ordinance 2022-1?
Make a motion we close the public hearing.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Okay, now we will have the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, next we have the invocation. Pastor Ray?
Let's pray together. All-powerful, all-knowing, and all-present God, thank you tonight once again for this special call gathering of hearts and helping hands. We invite you into this meeting. Thank you for shielding our elected officials and the department heads whenever they are tempted to embrace arrogance rather than humility. And give them tonight undivided hearts as they liberate for the good of our community. The Lord, as you surround each one of them that are in charge, help them to go large with counsel and wisdom that comes from above. Thank you for a special cloak of visions and dreams and aspirations and a new mantle of accountability among the people they serve. Lord, help those who fear you to stand tall and stand firm in their faith, knowing full well that you will go before them in the heavenly realms and fight battles with them. May your peace that passes all understanding preside over this business tonight, beginning now. And after this meeting settles, May we awake tomorrow with gratitude of your goodness, your grace, and your glory over our nation, which desperately needs you, and especially the 21632 zip code. Lord, I ask you to bless each family member of everyone that sits here in authority. Would you give supernatural wisdom to all of our officials who are also our neighbors? And for all these favors, we give you praise, and we call it done in the name of Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. Okay, next we have approval of the previous month's minutes. Chrissy sent them out late this afternoon, so hopefully everybody had a chance to read them. If so, I'll take there's no changes, I'll take a motion to accept the minutes as distributed.
I make a motion that we accept the minutes from last month's meeting as distributed.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Okay, next we're at the portion of public comment. If you have a public comment, please step up to the podium and state your name.
I'm Bart Johnson, 106 Charlotte Avenue, Fevelsburg. I had more of a question. I had noticed in the legals of the paper record recently that, and I think this was discussed maybe at the last meeting, about the RFP for 115 and 117 North Main Street. That property's been for sale off and on maybe about four times since 2006. The last time it was on the market was 2013. What's the story there? I mean, are you getting this RFP because you're trying to make improvements there, or?
So the town received a grant to do some work in that building. Mm-hmm. But the town has to use the grant money. So the RFP is to help get it up to code for certain things that are wrong with it, to help maybe make it a more viable property for us to be able to sell.
So what are the conditions that need to be improved?
I believe there was
electrical, plumbing, mold remediation, ADA compliance, and then just basic.
The front window, yeah, where the glass is, some of the architectural rails across the front needs to be kept the way that it is because of the age of the building.
Yeah, and, you know, that property's been for sale with three or four different realtors. So is price the function of the sale?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just a matter of trying to figure the right lid for the pot. It's just a matter of finding what would go in there and be successful. There's been a couple of things that have tried, and we really shouldn't be in the business of owning real estate. We would like somebody else to own it and somebody else to take it over and make it look nice and love it and care for it and feed it and, you know, have a successful business down there.
Well, originally it was sold and the financing was through a grant. Is that going to be the case for any potential buyer after the improvements, right?
How do you mean?
Well, the town, I think it was revolving funds.
Well, yes, and that's why the town owns it now, because they defaulted, so that's right. How the town got it back.
I think it would be all of our wishes that no.
Correct. Whoever, we don't want it back.
Preferably whoever can buy has enough behind them to capital to come in and just buy to be done.
Yeah.
Would be the wish. Now,
right.
You present an awesome plan and need our help, then we're open to negotiations. But I think the plan would be to be out of it 100%.
Yeah, I think obviously it's been overpriced for the last, 14 years, is it?
I don't know what it was ever actually really listed as.
Oh, yeah. It was listed.
No, I don't. I don't know what the price was. I don't remember what the price was listed at. So,
yeah. I know.
What was
okay.
it?
What was it listed Lincoln, for?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
But I know it was listed at various times for various prices. So, you know, again, I'm just curious. I thought I understood what the RFP was about and why what you were trying to do. I wasn't quite sure, but I, you know, don't know exactly how long that's going to take and what the intentions were.
Yeah, we'd like to just at least get it in somewhat shape. But if somebody came in to look and say, oh, there's, you know, black mold in there, you need to get rid of that.
Sure.
Or it's stuff that those people wouldn't have to get rid of.
Sure.
Right, people to make it a little more enticing.
People are probably going to ask for inspections and then, you know, mm-hmm. and then they're going to want somebody to remediate whatever.
Right, exactly. So we figure, and they, so if we use the grant money to get it up to snuff, at least a little better, mm-hmm. then then we might have something viable
well,
that somebody would be interested in.
You've got the resources to try to do that.
And that is a 100% grant, too, right? There's no
match
to that,
so
that will be no money out of town's pocket on that.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Anybody else?
Ray Parsons, 6923 Reliance Road, also pastor of Park Lane Church of God. Was just wondering what we can do about the dumpsters that really aren't dumpsters, they're trash bins. I don't mind every Saturday going to the dump for the town, but it's becoming just a little more than I can bear. And now because of the space between the dumpsters, it now becomes a packing place.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
What won't fit in the dumpsters just sits there and accumulates.
So I don't know if we need to have them. How often will they pick up more than once a week?
They come on Monday morning.
I'm going to tell you, it doesn't matter if the dumpsters are full or not. There are some lazy people in the town of Fettlesburg that will go up.
That's why we got rid of the other ones.
I can show up on a Monday knowing they haven't been dumped yet, and there will be trash bags sitting on the ground because they're too lazy to open the trash bag and sort it the way they're supposed to. They either need to be gotten rid of or a camera put up and us start writing tickets for loitering for the however big a fine as you can do. Not loitering, excuse me, littering.
Yeah.
Every time I'm at, start fining them because he is correct. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there are people that truly use them and use them. Like, I separate mine out.
Right.
But there were people, like you said, that just roll up and throw a trash bag out there. So.
I was there yesterday with cardboard and both of the cardboard containers were full and there was cardboard just sitting there. Yeah, I went back today with mine because there was just no room for it, you know. But yeah, I don't know that additional containers will. That won't solve
well,
the people
no,
who are
not help
you know
want to
just
throw
leaving.
A trash bag in it and leave it.
Some have become very smart. They're marking out their names on their boxes.
That's a whole lot of effort.
They really do. So they know what they're doing. Could they be moved to the other end of the parking lot? Because what's happening now is they're also encroaching on the parking bumper. So Waste Management keeps moving them closer to our property.
So when they set them back down? So could we move them to the end
where the other ones
what if we move them to where the single stream dumpsters were?
On the other side of service today?
Yeah. On that back end, so then they're not up encroaching.
And we would take care of the grass for you.
That would be awesome.
We would love to do that.
Yeah, I try to get them moved to Food Line.
No. If we put them down the other end, then we don't have to worry about mowing around them either, and it's a little easier to clean up when they're on the pavement for public works to scrape or to sweep up any of the stuff that's on the side.
Little bus stop will also be a little bit, you know, more open because it's really right in the middle.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's right in the middle of all that.
Yeah. Okay, we'll call them. We'll see if we can at least get them moved to the other side.
Thank you so much.
Sure. No, thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Could the council think about maybe moving them to another area in town? If you stop and think about it, this dumpster's right in the middle of town. Is there any place on the outskirts that they can go? People drive there anyway. I've seen two different people walk, but most of them drive anyway.
Yes, because I'm not carrying my recycle bin down to there.
Middle of town.
I don't know. We'd have to look to see. I mean, ideally, the best place would be outside of public works, but there's not really. We don't really have property up there, and everything else is behind the gate.
On town property.
So,
there was a suggestion up by the water tower, but I don't think people would drive up there to recycle.
Town owns a park.
Yeah, what park?
Chambers Park.
The old sports, right by Public Works, in that same area.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It would be nice if it could go by the town shed, but I don't think there's not room along there, and that's a gated entryway to get into there. They have to have a security code to be able to get in.
Part of Chambers Park is not used. The part with the Lions Club meeting, we've just got that mostly cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
Across the street, and back.
Across the street and back where? Oh, the other side
of
Chambers
Park? The other half of Chambers, the wooded side.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I guess it's all wooded, but dumping.
Yeah,
there's no camera
it
there.
It really is kind of like the woods.
Yeah, yeah. At least currently where it is right now, Pastor Ray can look at his camera to see who's dumping illegally.
Well, and we've got
he can check on that
town hall and the police.
Yes, between that, we might be able to check to see. I mean, we definitely have some options, so we'll try. The easiest option is to move them to the other end and see if we can post no dumping or illegal dumping. You're under surveillance. Maybe we post a sign that says you're under surveillance.
If I add also in there, it would be easy for Waste Management to do that because they have to do now. They come in the wrong way. I mean, the signs do not enter, but they do anyway.
Right.
So they come in the wrong end of the parking lot and make that big swing, and it's so much easier to come in the way it's supposed to, straight over those dumpsters.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Where they used to be.
Okay. We'll try that route first and see if that works. If not, then we can look at some other areas where we can put them. I like them, and they're used. 80% of the people use them correctly. 20% are the ones that we have the challenge with anything.
And then you're going to put them on the other side of where people come and wait for a bus.
It's right next to where they wait for the bus right now.
Yeah.
Right. Currently, there was the we used to have single stream recycling at that end, and people were throwing trash in there as opposed to single streaming all their stuff. So we had them take the single stream for the people that weren't doing anything, right? Just throwing it as trash, not just recycling. They were throwing all of their household trash in there and dumping.
I still say they're in the middle.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Be nice if we could find a spot for them that wasn't in the center of town. Maybe we can look and figure out something. Ideally, up by the town shed is the best place for them, but I don't know what kind of space we have up there with that gate. So, and them to be able to get a truck in and come during hours when somebody's there to dump them, that just puts a logistical challenge on that. So maybe we can look at that. Okay, do we have any other public comment?
Good evening. For you, those of you that don't know me, my name is Steve Stouffer, Republican candidate for sheriff. I called and spoke with the town, and they carved out a little bit of the agenda tonight for me to speak to you, so I want to thank you all for doing that. I know you have other business to attend to. I'm not going to waste a lot of time going into my resume with you. I'll try to be brief with that. I'm a homegrown Caroline County resident. I graduated from North Caroline High School in 1988. In 1992, I got married. My wife and I have raised two adult sons who are also both graduates of North Caroline High School. Our oldest son is a combat medic in the United States Army, and he and his wife are stationed in Louisiana. Our youngest son graduated from Gettysburg College. And 2 weeks from tomorrow, he will graduate law school and has accepted a commission in the United States Army JAG Corps that hopefully that will start in January. I've been serving our community since before I was a teenager. I grew up in a town not the size of Fellowsburg. I grew up in Ridgely, but it's a lot like Fellowsburg. There's not a lot for young people to do. I grew up in a home that was rife with domestic violence and dysfunction. And if it hadn't been for the local police officers and the members of the fire department to show me examples of how you were supposed to live and how you were supposed to interact with your family, I may not have gone the route that I did. I'm a member of various community boards. Now that I've been a police officer, I have served on the Department of Social Services Advisory Board. I'm currently a member of the Caroline County Ethics Committee. I have served in the Caroline County Republican Central Committee since 2011. And since 2014, I have been the chairperson. Real quick, I just want to let everyone know, I don't always sound like this. The pollen is doing things to my system. So I don't mean to chew gum and have water, but if I don't keep things moist, I will start hacking like a lunatic up here. My police background, like I said, I've been a police officer for 26 years. I purposely have had a very diverse law enforcement career. When I first graduated the academy, the Star Democrat used to interview the recent academy graduates about what your goals were. And my goal was to become sheriff of Caroline County. And at the time, Phil Brown actually teased me that he thought that I was gunning for his job and I hadn't even hit the road yet. But I've worked in every field of law enforcement except for canine. I have worked in administrative services. I have been a supervisor in a criminal investigations unit. I have supervised a patrol unit. I have supervised a special operations unit. I have drafted nationally accredited agency policies and procedures. I'm an FBI LEADA certified internal affairs investigator. I have investigated just about every type of crime you can think of, unfortunately, rapes, homicides, sexual assaults, child sexual assaults, kidnappings. I have traveled to Texas and Mississippi on homicide cases. I've really had a very diverse career, and I believe it has prepared me to run for sheriff. I don't think an administrator can be well-versed in only one aspect of law enforcement. I think it helps to have a very broad understanding of what the job entails. My plan is future for our sheriff's office. It's very simple. I think we can do more for the community than what we currently are. No offense to Sheriff Bounds. I've enjoyed working for him. I knew him before I came on staff, and we've been friends prior to my employment with the sheriff's office. I don't like the term do more with less, because that implies that we don't have what we should, but I think we can do more with what we currently have. Now, currently we are understaffed. We are five people down from our maximum allotment of 40 officers. Technically, we're actually down six, because one of them is in the academy. He won't graduate until the summer, and then we'll have another 12 weeks of field training before he's on the road himself. So that makes it more like six people down until that person is cut loose. So we have to address this revolving door at our office. In the past 11 years, most people don't know that the sheriff's office has hired 60 people for a 40-man agency. And some will say that that's pay. But when I first got out of school, I worked as a land surveyor, and I had the benefit of bumping into an old farmer, and being 18 and thinking I knew everything. There was something going on in society, and my resolution to it was we had to put more money into it. And he told me that when you throw money at a problem, eventually you just have an expensive problem. Mm-hmm. So I know it's not always money. And I know that because we can look at Dorchester County Sheriff's Office. In that same 11-year period, they've only had to hire three deputies, and they pay less than we do. So it is money, but it's not only money. Two of the people that left us this past winter, when we lost seven people in 90 days, two of them didn't even make it 6 months, after they graduated police academy. And that's either a leadership issue or it's a bad hiring issue. But for those two deputies to leave, they actually had to pay a large sum of money to get out of their contract with the county. So that shows you that it is more than just money for some people. So how do we fix that? Well, one, we have to change the culture. We have to make sure that everyone feels valued in the sheriff's office. We need to make sure that the policies and procedures apply to everyone equally. Too often I hear, well, that's that half of the building, they do that, this half of the building, we do it a different way. That's a recipe for disaster. And if you don't believe me, you can talk to Chief McDermott. He can tell you. When you have an agency that does it differently here and there, you have an agency that's pitted against itself, and that's just not going to survive. So we've got to change that. I feel confident the county commissioners are going to address the pay issue this summer. I'm hopeful that's not at a detriment to our staffing. One of the plans was to freeze four of the vacancies to use that money to address starting pay. I've spoken with all of the current county commissioners and the candidates for county commissioner that I think that's a mistake. I think that would leave the next administration, whoever the new sheriff is, it would leave them short-staffed. And we have no idea what our economy and our budgets will be next year. So to begin to try to recoup those people each year may just be impossible. So we've got to stay fully staffed. My next course of action as sheriff is to increase our presence in the county. Currently, our minimum staffing is three deputies on a shift. Now, of those three deputies, one of them is assigned to headquarters. So technically, we only have two deputies on the road. That's why a lot of times when you talk to people outside of the town and they've called for a deputy, you often hear, well, they're coming from Denton, because you know they're in Denton doing paperwork or other things that are closer to headquarters. So we've got to have three deputies on the road, and that's my plan. We can put three deputies on the road, and we can establish substations in the county that will keep them spread out. Keep a deputy down south, keep one up north, and keep one in the central part of the county, and we can do that without any additional tax burden on the citizens. We are already allocated for that number of people, and Preston is offered. They are interested in having a substation, and the town of Goldsboro is interested in having a substation. I believe those can be done with minimal financial cost. One of the things I hear people say was, what about computers? Well, most people haven't ever had to do it, but when you use a mobile terminal in a police car, it's very unsafe. You get tunnel vision on the screen, you turn your back to your window. It's a very unsafe environment, especially on night shift. When I was a patrol supervisor, I used to tell my guys, go to the substation, take your MDT or your laptop into the substation to do your reports. That way you're safe. That way you can focus on what you're doing. So that's what we would do, and that would alleviate the problem of having to run new computers in the substations. Goldsboro and Preston have adequate internet service to help us with that. I want to increase our community outreach. I just don't think we do enough outreach in the community. I recently had an opportunity last Friday. I came down, or a week ago Friday, and came down and met with Brandy James and talked about some different things we could do in the community. I think we can be a lot more engaged, not just in the rural community, but in the towns. When I worked for the sheriff's office years ago, we used to be in Fettlesburg quite a bit. One of the questions that was brought up to me at the forum in Preston I hate to use the word poach, because that's what people view it as, but would we recruit or try to take officers from Fettlesburg? And if we did, would we backfill that staffing shortage in Fettlesburg? As sheriff, your responsibility is to serve all the citizens of the county, not just the rural citizens, but the municipalities also. So if a Fettlesburg officer did join the sheriff's office and that did create a vacancy and a staffing issue in Fettlesburg, we would gladly step in and help cover that without charging the town. That's our duty. Our duty is to cover and serve all the citizens of the county equally. We would establish a recruitment and retention division. We would make sure that we were recruiting officers and that we always had a list to draw from if someone left. You're always going to have someone that thinks the grass is greener somewhere else and they can go get more money at another agency. We live in a time where if you look, every agency around you just about is hiring. Talbot County just advertised. Queen Anne's County is advertising. Maryland State Police are advertising. We are advertising. So you're always going to have some that are going to chase a dollar and an opportunity somewhere else. But if we had a list to draw from, we could minimize that downtime we have when we're short-staffed. We just can't have that. We would maintain our school resource officer staffing in the county. We are fortunate we're one of the few counties in the state where every school has a school resource officer. Queen Anne's County, as big as they are and with a much larger revenue base than we have, they don't cover all of their schools. I was amazed to find out they didn't cover their schools. But we are doing that. Now, one thing I would do when we are fully staffed, we would have a person available to have an additional school resource officer as a floater. That way, if we had an officer that had to take off, if we had an officer that was experiencing an issue with a sick child or had training, we wouldn't have to worry about paying overtime to staff that position. That extra officer who would be the supervisor of that program could step in and fill that vacancy that day. That person would also overlap in our circuit court. So when our circuit court needs an extra deputy, that person would be there. By doing this, it would save us a lot of money and overtime that's currently being used. We had to have a deputy come off the road today with only two people covering the road. We had to have one of them come off the road for an hour and help cover a court case because we didn't have enough staff at the courthouse. We just can't have that. We've got to make sure that we are adequately prepared to provide the services that you all need. You hear of Preston and Goldsboro paying overtime to have deputies there. Now, we benefit from that, but I'm a taxpayer like everyone else, and I don't think it's fair that you have to pay overtime to actually have a deputy in your area. You've already paid for our service. We should make sure that we're covering you. As far as I'm concerned, the sheriff, the captain, the lieutenants, we're all still police officers. So if someone needs something, any one of us can leave the office and help. When I was a patrol sergeant, there was many days the lieutenant would come out to the duty officer's desk and wonder where I was. Well, there was something. There was a call that needed to be handled, and that person had been waiting a little bit. So I went out and I handled the call. That's what we do. Our job is to serve the public. As sheriff, your responsibilities are twofold and they're simultaneous. One doesn't outdo the other. Your duty is to serve the citizens of Caroline County while simultaneously serving the staff of the sheriff's office. They are not mutually exclusive. We cannot have a policy that benefits the citizens but endangers deputies, and vice versa. We can't have a policy that's beneficial to the deputies but doesn't serve the needs of our citizens. We need to make sure that we're doing both. And the best way to do that, I believe, is for the sheriff to be out of the office, for the sheriff to be in the community, for the sheriff to attend the county commissioner meetings. So if someone does have an issue, the sheriff or his command staff are there, and they hear it that night. It doesn't have to be relayed through email and then track somebody down. You can actually speak to that person that night at the meeting. I believe that we should have someone at the town meetings, at Fellowsburg's and Preston's and Ridgely's and Benton's. We should be there. We serve you all. If a person was to come to a Fellowsburg County Council meeting with a concern, and you find out that concern is actually in the county, it's not fair to that person for them to say, we have to go to the commissioner's meeting tomorrow. Well, it's during the day. They have to work. So it could delay their response. If someone was here that night, they could speak to them personally and give them the information they need. We need to remember that we are serving the community, and not just those that vote for us, but those that don't support us. We serve everyone equally, and we need to make sure that we're doing that at all times. And I really feel that the best way to do that is for the head of the department to be out in the community to make sure that people know who they are and that they can speak to them. I brought some literature for you. I had planned on starting door-to-door in Fellowsburg this past Friday, but the pollen monster had attacked me, and I was not able to get out of my house at all on Friday, and my wife was afraid if I knocked on people's doors like I did, I'd be quarantined, so she made me stay home. But I brought some handouts to give to everyone. It's got my phone number, my personal phone number, my email address on there. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to contact me, give me a call, or email me. If you have any concerns, if you think something's not being addressed, unfortunately, this has been a very contentious election cycle for a couple of different races, and unfortunately, the sheriff's office is one of those contentious races. I've heard rumors that because I've retired from Queen Anne's County Sheriff's Office, I'm going to come in and displace people with deputies from Queen Anne's County. I can tell you, with my hand on the Bible, the pastor here, I've spoken with one retired officer from Queen Anne's County, and he doesn't live here. And for me, that's a deal breaker. I think you have to be vested in the community to be part of the command staff. That is the only person from Queen Anne's County I've spoken with. I think any new administrator that would come in and just start terminating people is a recipe for disaster. That's a failure waiting to happen. Everyone that works for that office has a talent, has a skill set that we need to utilize, and that includes someone that may be your opponent in a political race. Another thing that's been brought up is when I retired from Queen Anne's County, I was injured in SWAT training, and I have 2 steel rods and 10 screws in the base of my neck as a result of that injury. I was asked if that was going to hamper my ability to serve as your sheriff. I've worked for Caroline Sheriff's Office since December 17th of 2018. I have not missed one day's work due to my injury. I had my surgery in 2015, and in December of 2017, I was finally rehabbed enough that I could get back into the gym and get myself in shape. In December of 2018, Sheriff Bailen offered me a job. I passed my physical, and like I said, I haven't missed one day due to that. I work at the courthouse. Last summer, there was a case where someone escaped from the jail, ran down to the boat ramp, and I forgot that I was 51 years old, and I was sprinting down the boat ramp, and I got halfway down there and realized that was not a wise choice, and I was not prepared to run in my court shoes, but I was able to do so. My injury didn't hold me back in any way. And I only say that to you because, unfortunately, people hear things, and I'm very upfront with people. If you hear something that's a concern for you, I welcome you to please contact me. I'd love to talk to you about it. I enjoy speaking with people. I think that's our primary job as a representative, is to speak with the community. So if anyone has any concerns or questions, please, you know, reach out and let me know. I apologize to the pastor if he gives a prayer speaking about humility, and then you have to come up and sell yourself. You don't sound terribly humble when you do that. But that's the negative of having to campaign. You have to sell yourself whether you're a salesman or not. So does anyone have any questions while I'm here? Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't want to look like that person that just came to speak and run, but I actually do have a Lions Club meeting in Denton that our King Lion wanted everyone to be at tonight, and I'm currently 40 minutes late. So I'm going to try to get back so I'm not on anyone's fan list. But can I leave these
sure.
over on the long yep. table, and if anybody wants to look at one, they can.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Belt speed back to Denton.
Well, gas prices be what they are. Your speed's
that's true. That's an accurate statement.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Is there anybody else for public comment?
I have a comment on behalf of Bob Rao. I met him last week related to something else, and he brought it to my attention and wanted me to bring up this evening that he owns the Riverwalk property.
Yes.
He is interested in developing it with townhouses, and there's a provision of your town code that states that any townhouse offered for sale shall have party walls of at least 8 inches of masonry construction. He has an interested developer, and the developer has said that nobody uses the masonry construction party walls anymore, and he wanted to gauge to see if you all were interested in potentially amending the code, or if there was a specific reason that you provided it. And if you're interested, it's something I can bring up at the next meeting with an ordinance to amend it.
So I believe our code enforcement officer looked up. And if since we adopted the International Building Code standards, and that is not the standard, what is in our code mm-hmm. is not the standard that, I would certainly be open to, in my opinion, be opening to hearing and fixing it. If we just adopted those standards, then we should be following those standards.
Yes, in fact, Code Officer Newsom forwarded me an email. We talked about this earlier. He did some research. In fact, the International Code Council put out an article. I've got the link, so I'm happy to share it or post it as needed. Under the technical rubric, significant change to two-family dwelling separation in the 2021 International Residential Code. So it speaks specifically to exactly what these are, dividing walls between mm-hmm. dwelling units. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it speaks specifically to that. Keeping in mind, I don't think as of right now, because the last time I talked to him wasn't all that long ago, we actually don't have our building code filed yet. So it's on order. The other volumes are here in his office. Building code hasn't come yet. The town council adopted the 2021 code last summer. So as soon as that's in, we'll know exactly what
to
look
at. Can
you
send that link to me, please?
I can do it right now.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. Thank you.
I would say we're probably open for discussion anyway. But if that's what the building codes are saying, that's what we adopted for everything else. I don't know why we wouldn't mm-hmm. adhere to what they say for everything, you know, for that aspect also.
Council Windsor?
No, I'm good with it.
Okay.
I'll see, and I have, I purchased all of the building codes and international codes, the electronic versions, and some of them I have received, but I haven't received any books, so I'll see if I have the building code, and if I do, I'll send out the relevant section.
Thank you. Anything else?
No.
Okay, next we have the proclamation for the National Day of Prayer. So there's a proclamation for the town of Federalsburg, whereas in 1952, Congress established an annual day of prayer during which people throughout the United States were encouraged to pause in repentance and intercession for our nation, and whereas prayer can play a valuable and productive role in strengthening bonds of understanding, tolerance, friendship, and unity among all people, and whereas residents of Federalsburg cherish our heritage of religious freedom, and throughout our state and the nation's events,
will take place to celebrate the National Day of Prayer. And whereas the town of Fredericksburg is pleased to recognize the historic role that prayer has played in our nation by observing the first Thursday in May as National Day of Prayer. Now, therefore, Mayor and Council of Fredericksburg, do hereby proclaim May 5th, 2022 as National Day of Prayer in the town of Fredericksburg, and do commend this observance to all of our residents. So can I get a motion to proclaim May 5th, 2022, National Day of Prayer?
Make a motion we proclaim May 5th as a National Day of Prayer.
I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Now, Pastor Ray would like this presented Wednesday evening. They have a pre, is it a?
It's called the night before.
Night before. I have a migraine team training, so I cannot attend. If somebody could go present the proclamation. Is it 6:30?
6:30.
6:30 at Park Lane. So if.
I'll have to get back.
Okay, so I'll see if I can find somebody to present for you. So I'll let you know. I'll send you an email.
Can I get a copy of that tonight?
Yes, you can, if you want to take this copy. I think I have one typo in it, but because I had to manually type it up.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Next, we have Lisa Wool from the Nanticoke Watershed Alliance with an update. I'm going to see if I can hook this up to the TV, so since we have so many people in the audience.
If not, no problem. I can just talk. So I usually come out every year, and then the past 2 years, you know, I've tried to be a little conscientious about traveling to all the different towns and being a super spreader myself. So I kind of skipped last year. But usually I'm with the Nanticoke Watershed Alliance, and I usually come out and kind of give you guys a little update on what we've been up to, and then also see if you guys have any questions or concerns about the Marsh Cove, which is part of the Nanticoke Watershed. So we have a bunch of new programs we've been doing, and we've been really busy, and we also see you guys have been really busy on the Marsh Cove. I know there's really nice access. Looks really great. This is one of my favorite spots to take visitors to for kayak, because it's just a nice, pretty area to go. So the basis of all of our work is actually we have about 45 volunteers that are trained creek watchers, and they collect data on the water, and they go out every 2 weeks, collect data, and really see what the water quality is doing. And then we kind of look at that compared to, is there a clicker? Should I walk over there?
I can advance when you tell me to advance. Let me just share it in the Zoom meeting. So this way.
And so our creek watchers, they have such a high level training that our data can be used for federal policy and management decisions. And that's actually super rare for volunteers, but they go through all kinds of work to get that certified. And so we have a bunch of extras, but I'll kind of start with you guys if you want to pass around. This is only 2020. Unfortunately, just like everything else, our results are at a lab waiting to be processed. I think everything's behind with COVID. So hopefully we get 2021 out fairly soon. We always have to wait a couple months after the year to kind of get all the data and put it together. For the Marshy Hope, the water quality here has actually stayed the same, and it's a B. And to be honest, a B is probably one of the best ratings I've seen in the entire Chesapeake watershed. So the Marshy Hope is literally one of the most pristine waterways in the Chesapeake as a whole. And so there you can see our Creek Watchers program. That's a little map of how the different sections of the Nanticoke are doing. So you guys are kind of that reddish area up there in the top left. You've got some good water quality, and it's stayed about the same. And so there's also even sturgeon research they've been doing. I don't know if you guys are aware on the Marshy Hope here too. So you guys are kind of a hot spot in the environmental world. You know, we're excited. You know, the sturgeon are doing really well. And this is one of the few places where I think they're seeing babies, which is really rare.
That the blue catfish, I think you're eating them, so we're trying to get rid of the blue catfish.
We're working on that.
Yeah.
Relative to the herring population, are you monitoring it also?
The herring? We ourselves don't, but the Fish and Wildlife does.
Okay.
But they definitely are finding the baby sturgeon, which is a great sign. And they're trying to be careful, because I know recently they had an issue with a lot of boat strikes during when the strike birds were coming up. I know they were saying they were seeing a lot of fish kills, and so they were kind of talking about maybe doing some more outreach to fishermen, kind of when you see that there's a huge spawning, to just kind of slow down the motor in certain sections. And I think it's only a couple days, too. But it's so hard with things like this to get the word out because you don't always know until they're there, you know. It's a seasonal thing. So if you want to go to the next one. So since we always try to make our information, all the outreach and all the ground programs we do, we try to do them based on what the science says needs to be done. So one of the other things that we looked at was we have a new test where we go out and we look for something called an optic brightener, and it's what makes your whites white. It's in your laundry detergent, and if you remember, they used to call them bluing agents back in the day. That's what an optic brightener is, and we have a way of testing for them. So they actually aren't good or bad themselves. It's just our way of knowing if there's a septic or a sewer issue. So if we see high fecal coliform and, you know, there's horses in pasture, but we don't see any optic brighteners, we know there's probably a little bit of runoff coming from the horses. But if we see high fecal coliform and the optic brighteners, then we know there's probably a septic and sewer issue. So the reason why we're looking is, again, we aren't, you know, out there suing anyone. We aren't river keepers. We're not advocacy. But what we do is when we do testing, we try to see what the issues are, and then we form our educational programs and try to get funding to help resolve those issues. So any of the big red dots are areas where there was the high optic brightener and the high fecal coliform. So that means there's a sewage or a septic system. Now, if you see the purple, that means that there's no optic brightener and sewage. So that could be probably some type of animal production runoff when you see it that bright of purple. Maybe a poultry farmer who's not handling his manure properly or something along those lines. Or sometimes we see spikes too, just in the spring when they're spreading manure fields. But we'd rather see manure than chemical fertilizers, just getting things getting reused a little healthier. So, you know, all of it's a balancing act. And so we just try to help come up with economically feasible solutions. So when we did the testing, the town of Laurel came back to us and said, hey, you know, we ran some sewer lines out. We want to see about getting funding to help people connect. Could you test these areas and see? Because basically they can probably get bay funds to help pay to get people to connect to the septic if they can show that there's a sewer issue there with septic systems or out-of-date septic systems. So those are the type of things that we try to find the funds to conduct so we can help improve the water quality and habitat and just fix the problem, not point fingers or anything like that. So the other thing that we've done with our septic program is once we saw that, you know, we did have some hot spots, we also have some ponds and lakes where we're going to do a little more education with folks. And so we created information on how to know if you have a septic issue, what to look for, how to properly maintain your system. A lot of younger home buyers are coming out from the cities. They have no idea what it means to get a septic system, and so they just use it like they've been using their bathroom. So we're trying to educate people on like what you have to do to maintain it, because if it's not properly maintained, that's when you see pollution issues a lot of times. And so, and we also have in there funding sources and grant programs, so if they need to do repairs or overhauls, they might be able to get like a zero interest loan or partial funding and stuff like that. So trying to connect them to the solutions. And we also have had a lot of interest in, we do a lot of things like pollinator meadows. And so we worked with the Earn Seed Company to come up with a pollinator septic mix. And so it's a very specialized seed mix that has short, non-water seeking roots. So these guys aren't going to go into your septic system. They'll be short-rooted and kind of sit on top. So black-eyed Susans, they're one of them and a couple other ones that we designed. And so instead of having to mow your mound, you could actually create a pollinator meadow that you would just mow once a year. And so we have information on that as well. And all these brochures are available on our website as well if anyone wants to take a look. If you want to go to the next slide. So the other thing we've been working with, too, is how ditches are managed. As you can see, this is like a typical cross-section of a roadside ditch. When I first moved down here, I saw a lot of people really kind of weed-whacking and scalping them. And what they found is that that really creates erosion quicker. Because you don't have the roots, if you're familiar with cover crops kind of hold soil in place. And so that's what they're finding with the ditches, too. And Sussex County is actually using something called a wiper bar now, where they're just driving by with an herbicide that kills just woody plants and kind of going across the top, and then it takes out any trees and shrubs and it kills them, but it leaves the plant life underneath. And so they're finding that it's just as easy to maintain, the pipes aren't clogging up, and the water's actually getting cleaned as it goes through it because these plants are absorbing like the extra nutrients and things. The other thing, too, is they're not getting as much flash flooding because it's able to slow things down a little. You know, for about 200 years, we designed everything to get water quickly away from our houses and all these different places, and that worked really well. But now that we have all these towns and everyone's getting their water away quickly, we're now blowing out the guy downstream. So what we're looking at is areas where you can hold water for a little bit, or you can get into the ground more than just sending it downstream. We're trying to do that. And we find that the plants do a great job. They kind of create those crevices and really allow the water to kind of soak back into the ground and help support the groundwater for the farmers and everything. So we're trying to work on things like that. We've also found when it's just a dirt ditch that's been sculpted, it creates almost like a crust, and the water really doesn't soak in sometimes. It just goes right off. So it does help kind of soak the water in, slow it down a little. And again, this is where we have the ability to. If you have someone's field where you're going to flood their field out, we don't do that. Or we make sure sometimes there's step-down pools and different things, so the water's getting off their field, but then we're just slowing it down a little before it blows out the creek. Because I don't know about you guys, but when I was a kid, you had all these creeks that were running all the time. Now you get these flash floods and then a dead, dry creek the rest of the time. And so we're trying to restore that natural habitat to how it was so by how we're kind of connecting to it. And so we have some programs for homeowners where we talk about how you can manage your ditches. And then we also are working with DelDOT actually on doing some demonstration ditch management. Their guys really love to mow, so it's been an uphill battle. but we're talking about a little bit of a less mow program for them. And you do have to be a little cognizant. You can see here their Bridgeville yard, where we're doing a septic field and we're doing a ditch along the road and trying to get these guys to understand that usually what we suggest is you still mow one mower length along the road. That way people can pull over and all that good stuff. Because the other thing concern you have, too, is you want to make sure they can tell there is a ditch there. Because if you were to pull over and not realize there's a ditch there, you know, you're going to be in more trouble. So if you want to go to the next one. The other thing we've been working on is helping towns. We've been involved. This is actually in Seaford, so we've been working for a couple of years with Laurel and Seaford, and we'd love to come to Federalsburg, too, if you like. We've been helping them implement green infrastructure projects. So this is Conwell Street, which is right off the main shopping drive in Seaford, and they had one storm drain at the very end of the street, and it dead ends on the Nanticoke at the very end there. And it's a very wooded planted street, as you can see, and so this one storm drain would get clogged, the water would back up into people's yards, and then it would overflow the bank and go directly into the Nanticoke. So in a town meeting, they were kind of discussing this, and we said, well, we can have some engineers come out. So we did a planning process with the town, and they came up with what's called a green design. So it's kind of hard to see because it's so little, but so what it is you have curb bump outs, this little guy here, and this little guy here, and then this here. And so we reconfigured the parking a little. So they actually only lose one parking space by adding all of this. And part of what we incorporated, too, is we put things where there were already fire hydrants. So you're already not allowed to park there. And the firemen actually like these there because someone can't park there. But they can still get in, climb through. It's just, you know, it's... So for those not familiar with green infrastructure, it's basically... If you go to something that's been constructed like a shopping center in recent years, you'll notice that the landscaping isn't the normal curb and mulch. It's actually lower. And so those are specially designed landscape areas that capture the runoff from the parking lot, filter it, soak it through, and clean it. And they have all this stuff underground that you'll see. It's got about a foot of sand that filters water. And then the plants also suck up any extra things like nitrogen, phosphorus. And so these all function. This soaks up as well. And then it actually connects to the sewer system and goes out where it would normally in the river. So those are some things we're working on. So what we were able to do is what they would have had to spend, I mean, how much does it cost to add two more sewer grades? They would have had to spend that. And what we were able to do is we were actually able to fund the entire project with bay funds because it cleans water. So if you want to switch to the next one. So those are the type of projects. And then one of the problems that we've been finding with green infrastructure is that no one knows how to maintain it. So, you know, it's not azaleas. It's plants that are evolved to this area, and so that they sometimes can look a little wild. We tend to do our designs more to look like traditional landscape. But also, you really have to hand weed some of them. And so I have not figured out how to get a maintenance guy to hand weed any of these. So we gave up and we hired interns. And so we have interns every summer that we hire. We have three of them. And we actually have a contract for Cambridge, Laurel, and Seaford, where we go and we maintain their green infrastructure. And basically, we just go out and we mulch, water any of the new plantings. We've done also in Laurel a ton of tree plantings along Broad Creek. If you've been there, we planted about 400 trees. And so what's nice is we can have these kids, they're learning, you know, internship in the environmental field, but then they're also maintaining these things that, you know, the reality is the maintenance crews already have so much on their plate like everywhere else. So, you know, we're able to have these college students do it for an inexpensive price. And a lot of times we're able to get grants to pay for those things as well. And then we also recently had a training with, it's called Chesapeake Bay Landscape Professionals, where we brought them to Seaford and they held a training for landscapers to learn how to maintain these structures because with a lot of different regulations coming out, there's going to be more and more requirements for green infrastructure type projects. And so we want to make sure that there's people there that know how to take care of them properly. You want to go next slide? Oh, there's the interns. Okay, you can go to the next one. And so one thing I wanted to mention was we've done a lot of plantings on school sites, county sites, Laurel. And so if Federalsburg is ever interested and you have certain areas you want us to look at, we would chat with you, walk around, get an idea of what you want, and we would come up with a design. And then we would seek funding to put those trees in place. And then we'd send our interns over here to take care of them. So if you want, we can meet with you, walk around. I know you have a lot of waterfront park. Mm-hmm. And there is a nice amount of trees and shrubs, but if you want more, we're happy to help with that. And Laurel had a couple spots they wanted to augment in their Broad Creek, so we are able to do that. Then, last but not least, I don't want to keep you guys any longer, I appreciate it. We've been doing a lot of work with poultry growers recently. And basically, they own a lot of property, and a lot of them have bought land, you know, kind of cleaned it out, put a bunch of houses down, and now they're mowing all that. And so they have swales in between their farms. So this is actually one of the swales in between the row houses. And what we've done is planted it with a pollinator meadow. And this is really great because it provides food for bees, for nearby fields. Also, they only after the first year have to mow once a year. So instead of trying to get their mowers into these swales that are wet sometimes, you know, they have to mow a couple times the first year to get the field growing without a bunch of, you know, thickets and things. But after that, it's just once a season, early in the spring, that they mow, and then they have this beautiful pollinator meadow. And it's really nice because you'll see within a year, it usually takes 2 years for it to look, like that one's about 4 years old. Native plants put all their energy into their roots the first 2 years, so I'll be honest, it looks bad the first 2 years. But if you stick with it, then you have a nice meadow like this, and it just really, it's gorgeous. And it's amazing how alive these things are, too. I mean, you'll see like 30 different butterflies and... and the poultry growers have been really on board. So we've already done about 5 farms. We have designs for a couple in the works right now. And so we've been working on that. And then I think this is the last one. Yes, churches. We've been working a lot with churches. See the pastor back there. And so a lot of them have properties. And some of them had additions built on and, you know, have been had to do some stormwater projects and different things. So a lot of times they'll invite us, we'll take a walk around with them, see. Sometimes they have wet issues or different things, and so we'll take a look and make some suggestions. And so we've had a lot of interest in churches. At Our Lady of Lourdes, they had a big stormwater basin that was just mowed grass, and so we took all that out, and they have irises and cardinal flowers and all these beautiful flowers in there now. And so we did a community planting day and switched that over to a pollinator meadow. Crossroads Church has a huge campus, and we did whole section of trees, I think 150 plus trees that we did in there. And then there's several other that you can see that we worked with planting plans. And then Centenary Church in Laurel is redoing their parking lot. They had acquired Atchison parking lot that was actually was tennis courts. And so they're going to repave all of it. And so we said, well, whatever money you're going to spend on that, can we raise the rest and give you a green parking lot? And so they said, yeah, they're interested in that. So right now we have 2 grants in for engineer designs, that's the first step. And so they're going to have porous pavers in certain areas and then also kind of like a large rain garden and where their entrance is with their entrance sign will be there. So It'll capture all, they're only about a block up from Broad Creek uphill, so it's kind of nice because it'll capture any runoff from their property, soak it into the ground, and they'll, you know, be able to capture all that water and have these beautiful gardens as well. So they were really interested in doing something along the lines of creation care, and so they wanted to do the green parking lot as a way to do that. Once those go in the ground, we'll also be hosting some different tours, so we'll be inviting different churches to come see some of these projects. But that's it for my time. I have a couple other documents. I have a homeowner's guide, I think we did after I met with you guys last time. And then also, this is what we use to solicit our poultry farmers, and it's kind of different things someone can do on a poultry farm, so if you know any growers, send them our way.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time. Do you guys have any questions?
I will be reaching out to you because, like, this was. Oh, Scott, I'm going to come back by with that.
Very timely.
Course,
we just.
Sorry.
Mayor Abner and I just did the Bay Water Alliance wandering.
Yeah, it was the Alliance for the Chesapeake. They did a wandering. It was Wandering Maryland Waterways
last week.
It was great, and I will send you their information.
Yeah, yeah.
We started out in Baltimore. And went through the harbor and the stuff they're doing up there, and they had like all these new rain gardens and all of this stuff that they've been doing. And then we ended up down into, we went to Masonville Cove, which is South Baltimore, which is a reclamation area for the port where they pull a lot of the dredging, but it's now a living classroom for the kids. For the school kids to come and learn about what lives in the bay, what the water quality is, and what they've been able to do up in Baltimore with cleaning the water up. And then we went down to, we were down on Tillman Island, and then we went to
Poplar Island.
We did a tour over there for Poplar Island.
And then up to Y Mills to the big project they've done up there. They had a whole big meadow.
They took that field.
Right on Route 50.
Right in front of Queenstown, in front of Queenstown College, they took that meadow and they basically landscaped it to be, because it's the Y Mills,
it's the head
of the Y Mills River.
Okay.
So they were getting a lot of drainage from the fields and they wanted to clean the water before it got into the Y Mills, into the tributaries.
Well, it's interesting because in Laurel, we were talking about how, you know, places always say, oh, don't cut the flowers. And we're like, it'd be fun to have a big pollinator meadow like the one you saw. And be like, no, come pick flowers.
That'd
be
awesome.
You know, and they have, you know, some playground equipment, different things that have just gone in. And so I think some of your park areas would be perfectly to incorporate. I'm kind of the opposite of a lot of environmentalists. I think kids should get muddy and pick flowers and, you know, put rocks in their pockets.
The Broad Creek project came up several times in conversations. And for us, a lot of the people there, we are not part of their watershed. We're part of yours. And so we were like, man, you know. So it's really nice to hear.
Should I reach out to you guys?
Yeah, I'm going to send you an email because I have another opportunity that I think that you guys could be interested in. So one of the things we're doing for our bicentennial is we're doing like 6.5 feet sturgeon. And we want public art to paint them, and we're going to put them
along the river. We are aware of our
sturgeon. So I'm going to send you guys one of those because I think it would be great if you sponsored a giant sturgeon.
Yeah. what I call a micro triathlon here, and I thought it would be really funny to do because you guys have the perfect setup on your part. Because we're teasing, there's some where you like run 20 feet and you tube 10 feet. You know, like
we should talk about that too, though.
Yeah, we totally. Cause there's some places where we know that we have a lot of places to mow, and it would just be easier if we just naturalized it and made a pollinator garden. And then Wednesday evening, we have our first training for Sustainable Maryland certification.
Okay.
And I know, like, pollinator gardens and all that stuff is definitely, that's on the task list of stuff that you can help get your certification, so.
Yeah, it'd be nice if we could almost work with someone to come up with a whole plan for your waterfront, and then just start to look at different phases of funding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love that. So we'll tell Manager Doreen and I, we'll reach out to you and catch up with you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Are you staying left?
I can.
That would be something to tie in with Charlie Berlong's people that are going to be doing that new project here.
Yes.
Training?
Yes. I talked to Charles about that. This is for the downtown partnership for the businesses that are pitching in to help, like, with Main Street.
Decent training for them. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And Union Church parking lot.
It's
got that back parking lot where it's wet. You know, on the riverside of that would be a a nice trap for
on the river side of that would probably be town, but yes.
But yes, but we could do the planning where we can't mow, right? That's what we're doing down at the marina. There's just places you can't mow because you get stuck. But if we could turn them into pollinator gardens, then, you know, we don't have to worry about mowing and... Definitely. And it serves multiple purposes.
In this area, too, sometimes we've done, like, a little mix of some of the cypress, too, and it looks really pretty. Mm-hmm. And they love the wet spots. And mm-hmm. they'll suck up so much of that water. You know, it's amazing.
Does the marsh oak have a river keeper?
So there's not a river keeper dedicated to it. But Matt Fluta is the Choptank river keeper. And I know... there was a salmon hatchery that was being discussed. I know he was looking into the details of it because his group is a river keeper, and so they were planning to, like, be involved in that area. We are a river keeper. We're not advocacy, so we don't get involved in any of
it. I didn't think you were, but I just wondered. I didn't think we had a river keeper for the marsh oak.
You don't, but if you ever had questions or concern about advocacy or ordinance and things like that, Matt Fluta, I would help you in this area.
Okay, best to with you.
Beth. Yep,
Beth's there. She's done programs in our museum here.
Oh, okay, that's great. The other thing, too, is there's the Friends of the Nanticoke. They don't tend to be as involved up here. They're more down in the lower Nanticoke, but they do investigate different issues and tend to be more of an advocacy organization.
Great, thank you very much. Next, we have the award for the contract for residential trash collection.
Having put out the RFP, we had two responsible bidders. Houston Shore Environmental came in with the lowest bid and the most responsible service. They've also been providing service to the town when our trash truck is unable to provide the service in the shop or otherwise. This has been, the terms of this contract have been discussed, turned over to our town attorney who prepared the agreement within the context of the scope of work for the RFP as well as the contract that the bidders bid. So now it's to the point of review of the contract, and if it determines it be a contract that the town wants to get into, vote to approve the contract.
Does anybody have any questions regarding the contract? Seeing none, I will take a motion to award the contract for residential trash collection to Eastern Shore Environmental, LLC.
I'll make a motion to that effect.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you for your guys' hard work on that. I know that was a lot.
That takes effect June the 1st.
Yes.
Are they going to provide the cans?
They're using our cans.
Are they?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they will use our cans, which was great. They could use reuse our cans.
I think the only change is the day.
Yes, and we will do mass advertising for it's now Thursday pickup, correct, instead of Tuesday pickup. So we will. That gives us a month to get the word out that we have a new trash collection person, and it's on Thursdays.
Apartments included.
Okay.
And this is the outfit that's been picking up for us when we have not been able to pick up. So you guys have already received their services for many weeks.
All right. Next, we have discussion of the draft for the fiscal year 2022-2023 budget. Town Manager DeRay.
Mayor, members of council, this is our second review of the budget. This budget includes all the departmental expenditures, revenues that have already been looked at, police, which has already been looked at. I just want to bring your attention to a couple of things. First of all, we are still short the capital projects, and the reason for that is we're waiting on a funding decision for two projects. The MDE funding for the reconstruction, the fixes to the sanitary sewer pump stations to the tune of a pending grant application of $2.4 million and a small $248,000 grant from Connected Communities for an initial layout of a broadband fiber process to begin. $248,000 buys you something that doesn't buy you that much, but it's a start, and neither one of these grants require any town match. Now, MDE may wind up being grants and loans. That wouldn't be the case with the broadband grant application. Fiscal year starts July 1. Public hearing for the budget's going to be June 20th. So we frankly can't wait forever on these capital projects, a decision on these capital projects. Having said that, there's always the ability to amend the budget when we hear one way or another. Obviously, if we get that projects aren't funded, they wait another year. If we get that they are funded, budget needs to be amended accordingly, and that's all on the capital project side. There's just, and of course, there's the ARPA capital projects, which are pay-as-you-go. So those will require no obligation to report out, except for the one-year annual report to the United States Department of Treasury on our ARPA expenditures, but there's no waiting for reimbursements for those sorts of projects. Those will be pay-as-you-go out of funds we've already got allocated to us, anticipated to be the AMI water meter system and street repairs and repaving that we can get into. There's one thing that is I'd like to point out and have to entertain any other questions is in your staff is in staff report is page 7 of 22. Now you don't have 22 pages worth of spreadsheets because after page 13 they become notes, and sometimes those notes aren't anything particularly insightful. Typically they say things like, you know, breakout of salaries and who's funded by this line. There's a couple of lines that also say there, when we, as we run a surplus, or at least not a deficit, it says to the good. But one of those lines is on page 7. It's in yellow, currently listed in the general fund revenues. It's sale of solar credits. And again, that's yet to be discussed, but the anticipation is that the sale to the Energy Consortium would yield about $59,500. Not listed there because I'd like to entertain discussion about where to list the sale of the solar credits. If not necessarily in the general fund, if they're over at the water fund side, they can pay for water tank maintenance on a yearly basis because we need to get into the water tank maintenance program. Which is not a capital project, it's actually an operational cost. Or they can go over on the sewer side and on the wastewater side. You see on the wastewater side, at least on paper, so pending any large fixes at the sewer plant, the sewer fund seems to be running a little healthy. So happy to entertain any discussion as to where to locate the sale of the solar credits. Again, it will be about $59,500 if sold to the Energy Consortium. Again, it's part of a regulated marketplace, so any proposer isn't going to be wildly different from the Energy Consortium. Town already has a partnership with and do serve in public interest. So that's where we are as far as the holdouts. You've also got the year-to-date through March 31st, which is not closed out. Hopefully we'll be able to close that out in the not too distant future. There are always pending invoices, or I hope we got all our credit card bills in, you never know. So that's where we are roughly through three quarters of the year. And again, outside of a line here or there, and they are typically maintenance lines, we seem to be doing pretty well this fiscal year. So it's not much of a padded budget. It's relatively, it's current year plus a few. Obviously, the personnel constitute the largest share of the operational departments. employees are, David's proposing that a 2.5% cost of living increase in a year where inflation's been decided at higher than that, but the employees are also, eligible employees are also scheduled to receive the second part of their ARPA premium pay in September, which will assist keeping those cost of living increases close to where the cost of living actually is posted. So that's what we've got. Probably by notice, the new hired services on page 4. It would be one of those notes that I spoke about in yellow. It's right there near the bottom of the page. That's passed through, obviously. That's money that's collected here and is paid out to the contractor. So, again, happy to answer any questions, big picture or line item. And I'm glad we've got our treasurer here, as always, to answer any questions, specifically on the year-to-date, because the year-to-date captures three-quarters of the year, so some of these issues may have come up earlier part of the year. We don't have the first quarter or the first half in front of us. We've just got cumulative through three-quarters of the year.
You have any questions?
The questions, comment would be that the selling of the solar credits, I think, needs to stay in the water/wastewater department.
That was my thought also.
That is where the grant came from to get that. I think it'll do a disservice to the citizens to take it out of those and put it someplace else.
Yeah. That's what agree. I thought also.
Yeah, it was what also the electric.
From the wastewater treatment plant, so... I feel like that's the fund that needs assistance.
And like you said, tank management and several other things, and that money would be gone too, so.
Correct.
Right. Right. It won't take long to spend that money.
Tank maintenance is about $43,000 a year.
Yeah.
Was it that high?
Yeah.
Well,
we got
coming. Well, no, I know. I just didn't remember it being quite that high.
I will double check with Southern Corrode and Mr. Lucy on that, because I think you're right. We've gotten down to more like 38, 39.
So is the intention to introduce a budget ordinance at your next meeting with the public hearing June 20th?
I'm running out of things to say about the budget.
So that's a yes.
Well, I mean, it can go forward with...
You could always introduce an amend for
our project's just not funded.
Yeah.
I mean, because I doubt we'll know from NDE. I don't think last year we found out the NDE until late June or July.
Yeah.
So everybody adopted their budgets already.
Right.
It can just go forward without those, and if we need to amend the budget in July, is what we'll do.
Yeah, I think that's a fine plan. Councilwoman Soule? Councilman Windsor, do you guys have any questions or comments?
Nope. I agree with Scott about the funds.
All right. Thank you. Since we've already had the public hearing, we will vote on adopting Ordinance 2022-1. So we would like to have a vote or a motion for adopting Ordinance 2022-1, an ordinance of the Mayor and Council of Fettlesburg to amend Chapter 143 of the Fettlesburg Town Code titled Planning and Zoning Commission to amend the composition of the commission to remove a member of the council.
I make a motion we approve Ordinance 2022-1.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, next we have Mayor and Council action items. Councilman Windsor.
Planning and zoning. Final review of dark container plant expansion was approved unanimously. The preliminary site plan review for Choptank Community Health, the new Fettlesburg Center at Hayman Drive, that also was approved unanimously. Preliminary site plan review for McDonald's drive-thru. That also was approved unanimously. I question that because you got two lanes, one window, one pay window. It's going to be a mess, but.
And that doesn't take away parking?
It
that
does.
That affects the number of spots that a business has to have by ordinance in the town of Fellowsburg?
It does. Where you pull into McDonald's and take a right, there's parking there. My understanding is they're going to be parallel parking.
Oh, instead of diagonal in, mm-hmm. they're going to have a parallel park.
Yeah,
okay.
So.
Based on the amount of square footage of the building, they already have way more parking than they need.
Okay.
So what they lose is not
going to
affect
it.
All right.
Chop Tank is 3,800 medical patients. 1,700, they're going to have dental. They're looking to provide 3 medical providers and 3 dental providers, and they're hoping to break ground early of 2023. And last but not least, they've changed the planning and zoning meeting from its current date to 5/23 at 6 p.m. Thank you.
Great, thank you. A great recap. Appreciate it. Councilwoman Sewell?
Mayor Abner and I, along with Denise Nagel, planted flowers around town on Friday, and they do look good. The mayor's been watering them very, very loyally the last several days, trying to keep them alive. But so that was a fun activity to do, and we were very happy to do that. For our council members, we have our CAM meeting coming up on the, I didn't write the date, on the 11th, I believe. Yes, on May 11th, which is a week from Wednesday at 6 p.m. in Hillsboro. The Lions Club is sponsoring a fun run down at the marina on May 15th, and it's $5 entry fee, and the Lions will be matching that. For every entry fee, they will match that amount, and it's going for St. Jude's Pediatric Cancer. And Mayor Abner, are you discussing grills tonight?
You can ask about that. Okay. For the Lions Club. I have a couple other things. So.
The Lions Club would like to install 2 or 3 grills up at Chambers Park around the pavilion and around the picnic area across from Lions Hall, and they want council's approval to move forward with that before they did any purchasing.
Basically, like what was there?
Yeah, just the little like exactly. Charcoal hibachi kind of grills on a pole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it.
No, me neither.
Okay. And we just, like I said, they just wanted to make sure everyone was on board with that before
he bought them.
Yeah. So I will let
him
know.
So we didn't have to return a bunch of grills. And we actually did discuss 2 small ones over by outside Alliance Hall, and then a larger one over by the octagon pavilion, so that if you wanted to cook for a family or a party, you would have more than having to. Well, you could cook 4 hamburgers, and then that's it. Sorry, you don't get to eat until the next ones are done.
And you guys probably remember when the grills were up there. People did use them, and we would like to encourage families to use them again. Mm-hmm. So.
We did tell Wayne that he needed to purchase the Lions Club. We also needed to purchase ash buckets for safe ash disposal, the stainless steel, and they were in that same catalog. But I think Wayne was going to have us check to see if we got a better municipal rate through that catalog company. The Lions Club would pay for them, but if we can get a better rate as a municipality, he would appreciate that. So he was going to check with them to see if they actually had municipal pricing and let me know. But since we told him it was okay, because he looked at getting some benches too for up there.
Yeah. That's all I have, though.
Thank you very much. Councilman Phillips?
Let's see. The last 2 Tuesdays I've spent in Preston at the candidate forums.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of good people running in Caroline County this year. If you have not heard them speak and what they're about, I know there's a couple additional forums throughout the county still. I would highly recommend and suggest you go and listen to what they have to say. We got a diverse group running for sheriff and for county council. Got three spots on the council. We had seven running, one of which I was told is dropping out. We'll see. He was making up his mind. He hasn't gotten back to me, but so there's a lot going on with them. May 15th and June 4th, Soapbox Derby. May 15th is a practice. It'll be Sunday. So, Debbie, move your car if you need to leave the house that day. If anybody knows any kids that would like to participate between the age of 7 and 18, 7 and 17, I believe, they can reach out to me and I can get them in touch with the right person. Race day will be June 4th. The races start at 9 o'clock on West Central. And Saturday was Cromwell's prom, and the junior class did a wonderful job of putting it all together.
Pictures were great.
Yeah.
That's it.
I have, as far as the forums, the one that I have in my calendar is Saturday, May 21st at 9 a.m. at the Denton Legion is the next one that I'm
okay.
aware of.
What was that date?
5/21 right. at 9 a.m.
That's a Saturday, right?
Yeah, it's a Saturday
yeah, okay.
at the Legion in Denton.
Yeah, it was very informative.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend going to
it
check out the candidates and hear what they have to say. That one, the last Tuesday, it was 3 hours. It went from 6 to 9.
Were, yeah.
Yeah.
It was
well,
pretty
we,
much
we
only the
East
commissioners.
For the sheriff's one, I really would have liked to have seen that one, so it'll be
yeah.
nice to hear
the
sheriff's
commissioners
the other
were last
one.
Tuesday, and then the sheriffs were the Tuesday before.
Right.
With the other.
A few others,
but nobody really had questions for the others, so.
Is that it?
Oh, no, I just want to say, make sure we keep this on record that the man running for sheriff said he will not charge the town of Fellsburg to cover.
I
do
heard
not,
it.
Do not lose that statement.
Right?
He made it now twice in front of me,
tape.
So.
I figured you were the one that asked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that. Anything else?
No, that's all.
Awesome. Thank you. So as I had kind of described earlier, Councilwoman Sewell and I did the Wandering Maryland Waterways Tour. The one of the benefits that we did with that was also we had dinner with the Secretary of the Department of the Environment, Secretary Ben Grumbles. And it was a great conversation. It was a great evening to talk to see what other towns were doing. There were towns like it was Hagerstown, Williamsport. It was towns out of the Western Maryland, and then it was there was 8 or 9 towns on the Eastern Shore that
mm-hmm.
were represented on this
Eastern
bus trip.
Was represented.
So it was really nice. It was really informational. We got a lot of great ideas to put into play here, and we ended up with a new contact. So DNR created a new position. There are two people that now work in the ecotourism section for DNR, and they recognized the issue when COVID hit, right? Everybody was like, oh, we got to go outside, and now towns are like, yeah, great, we've been telling you this, but how do we capitalize on it, and how do we fix some of the issues that we have to make it where it is a viable resource for the ecotourism? Today, we participated in a meeting with the gentleman that is running the program from DNR, and they basically have 5 pillars that they want the projects to meet. Our project to clean up the northern part of the Marshy Hope meets all of their pillars, so we are going to do a formal ask to get some help to get the metal piece out of there, to get some of the trees out of there, because it really is, it is great up in that part, up into Ottawald, and you know, people could come here, they could pack a picnic, they could paddle up in there, enjoy the wildlife, fish, enjoy themselves. Perfect. And that's really what we're really going to try to push that. So we'll work on a formal presentation to go to DNR for the ecotourism, and hopefully we can get some funding and some help to get that squared away up there to so that everybody can enjoy it. What we all know is a great asset. And part of what we talked about was the education, right? If you get people involved and they understand why they shouldn't throw their dog poop, like leave it out in the thing or throw it in a ditch, or because you really should take care of it because it pollutes the waterways. There's just a lot of education, I think, that could be done about that kind of stuff, your plantings and mowing and kicking your stuff into the river. So I think if we can use some of that and parlay that into those pillars that will really help with that. Councilwoman Sewell and I also attended the ESAM dinner last 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was really great. We met with the, we heard from the state delegation. Obviously, session is now over, and they have asked for a list of priorities, what we want to do in Fredericksburg, so we need to come up with our list so that when somebody says, hey, we have money, we can give them the list of what we want to get done. Fredericksburg Activity Center, I've talked to them about some of the things they want to do over there. One of the questions they had for mayor and council was, would we be interested in, they would like to approach the senior center to see if they wanted to move over there. It's a little more ADA compliant, and it takes upstairs out of the mix for them having to get up the stairs or the elevator. So we're open to them going over to the senior center. They would reach out for the group that run the senior center to see if they would be interested in shifting stuff over there. And then we need to talk about what for their ask for the ARPA funds, what they can and cannot use it for. There's been some question about that, so we need to get some final ruling on that. And then lastly, thank you to everybody that participated with the Lions Club for the river cleanup. We had it was 11 or 12 of us mm-hmm. that participated in the river cleanup. We cleaned all the way down from the Marina Park down to the VFW and then along the roadway, because there's a lot that blows out of people's trucks or cars where they throw it out of their window over the bridge. So I got a lot of trash off the road. So it was great. We probably got about 9 or 10 bags of trash mm-hmm. and a car bumper. That yeah. I found.
A few fishing rods.
Yeah, we got fishing rods.
I took 3 of them home.
Oh, thank you. So then there was probably 12 bags of trash. Appreciate that. So it was great. So it was a good day. So that's all I have. We have an executive session. So if I can get a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
I make a motion that we go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion passes. Thank you all for coming. It was great to have people here.
Yes.
Thank you.